You can meet and hear Mark and Molly Hemingway, Robert George, Albert Mohler, Brian Wolfmiller, Hans Feeney, and Will Wheaton at the 2020 Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference, Friday, June 12th and Saturday, June 13th in Chicago. For more information, visit issuesetc.org or call 618-223-8385. The 2020 Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference, June 12th and 13th at Concordia University, Chicago.
I cannot find any compatibility between the way this president conducts himself and anything that I find in Scripture.
Do the critics of religious conservatives understand the metaphysical worldview that religious conservatives live with? And I think they either do not or they are unwilling to learn. And so I think there's also a question of how many religious conservatives do you know?
Because they don't want boys to show their feelings. They want boys to show only feelings that make them weak.
Do not picture the joy of eternal life as static, as though it doesn't grow. Because throughout eternity, you get to grow in your union with Him.
Michigan snowbirds enjoy listening to Issues Etc. while surf fishing in Florida. Oh, gotta go, fish on.
The United States law has had an uneasy relationship with this particular industry, even when this industry was underground and backdoor and black market. It was an uneasy relationship. We couldn't exactly wrap our legal heads around something like pornography. We don't know how to define crudity, but we know it when we see it. And then when we see it, should it be illegal? The willing adult consenting participants. But you know, that industry has changed. It's no longer backdoor. It's no longer black market. It's big business. It's in our homes. It's on our children's devices. And it's tied up with a lot of things other than pornography that are illegal as well, like sex trafficking and even darker things that we cannot mention. So what do we do with it? We say ban it. And there's a crowd of voices saying, no, that's impossible. And it's against the First Amendment. Greetings and welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in. We're going to talk about the legal case for pornography. Dr. Robert George, professor of jurisprudence at Princeton University, will be our guest. A little later, Terry Mattingly joins us to talk about media coverage of the season of Lent. Dr. Robert George joins us. He's McCormick Professor of Jurisprudence and Director of the James Madison Program in American Ideals and Institutions at Princeton University. He's author of several books, including In Defense of Natural Law and Conscience and Its Enemies, Confronting the Dogmas of Liberal Secularism. Dr. George will be making the case for the Constitution and Civic Virtue at the 2020 Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference, June 12th and 13th in Chicago. Dr. George, welcome back.
Thanks, Todd. It's a pleasure to be back on your show.
You are a staunch advocate for the First Amendment and for free speech. Many might ask, what are you doing advocating government intervention into what many people consider, well, not great speech, but it's free speech?
It's not speech at all, Todd. And it's never been considered speech, never been considered protected speech. We're talking about obscenity now. It's never been considered protected speech under the First Amendment. Even the most liberal Supreme Court justices have, in the vast majority of cases, held that obscenity is in a category with conspiracy, treason, false advertising, defamation, that is slander and libel, unprotected speech, speech that doesn't count as being protected under the First Amendment, if it's speech at all. And I strictly deny that it's speech at all. What our children have access to now on their devices, as you rightly pointed out, are gross images, horrible images, degrading, exploitative images, things that no one ought to be seeing. This is not advocacy of a point of view, which is what's at the core of the First Amendment. This isn't mere advocacy of pornography or advocacy of obscenity. I agree that would be protected by the First Amendment. We can advocate anything. The First Amendment, no matter how vile, and the First Amendment does protect that. But this is not advocacy. This is a material that appeals not to our reason, not to our head, or for that matter, even to our heart, but to what the courts have described as the prurient interest in sex, having no redeeming social or scientific or artistic or literary value. It has always been the prerogative of the government to regulate and even prohibit obscenity. Obscenity laws have withstood constitutional challenge. There is an issue about what the definition of obscenity is, and the courts have given us a definition. That definition is narrower than I would like it to be, but nevertheless, within that narrow definition of obscenity, there's room for the prosecution of a vast amount of material that is damaging our kids, that is leading to sexual and pornographic addiction, that is abetting the trafficking of women into the pornography industry, the exploitation of women. We've got a public health and public safety as well as public morality crisis on our hands with the obscenity boom. And there's no reason why government, beginning with the Justice Department at the federal level, should not be bringing prosecutions to enforce the existing laws on the books, having passed constitutional muster when it comes to obscenity.
How do you respond to someone who says, because when your letter reached the desk of William Barr, some were saying you were calling for the banning of pornography. How do you respond to that?
Well, I am calling for the banning of obscenity. Not all pornography qualifies as obscene, and if it does not qualify as obscene, of course, then it's regarded as protected under the First Amendment. Obscenity as material that appeals to the prurient interest in sex that isn't justified by some scientific or artistic or literary value. And the courts have a standard test for that. It's called the Miller test. It comes from a case in 1973, which is still the prevailing doctrine, legal doctrine, Supreme Court case, when it comes to obscenity. And I'm simply asking for the obscenity laws that passed the Miller test to be enforced. We wouldn't come anywhere near the gray area, Todd. We could spend the next 20 years having federal prosecutors prosecuting the clear cases of obscenity without getting anywhere near the borderline cases where maybe some people could make the argument that this may be pornographic but not obscene. We don't have to get near the gray areas anytime soon. We can prosecute just the clear cases, and I'm all for beginning right there.
Why has it gone unprosecuted up to this point?
Well, of course, social liberalism, including that form of social liberalism that celebrated pornography as liberating, that made a hero of Hugh Hefner, that treated pornography as mere harmless naughtiness. In fact, something that sophisticated people enjoyed and appreciated, that social liberalism was dominant and continues to be dominant in the elite sector of the society. I think that's an utterly misguided view. I think pornography in general, certainly obscene pornography, is debasing and degrading and deeply harmful. But my view is not the majority view in the elite sector of the culture. It enjoys wide support more broadly among our people, although even there it's eroded to some extent, in part under the false belief that the First Amendment protects this stuff. But in the elite sector, it has gained the dominant hand. And of course, elites have a lot of power, especially with courts in our society, especially in the political domain. So we have not been getting obscenity prosecutions. The Obama administration went 8 years, the whole 8 years, without a single obscenity indictment. And this is despite the fact, I repeat, Todd, that obscenity laws are on our books, including federal obscenity laws on our books. They're laws in good standing. They have passed constitutional muster. They've withstood constitutional scrutiny. And yet the Obama administration did not bring a single indictment against this grotesque industry. There's plenty to indict there, believe me. They didn't bring a single indictment. And as a matter of fact, Eric Holder, the attorney general under Obama, shut down the Pornography Prosecution Task Force, the unit responsible for porn prosecution or obscenity prosecution in the Justice Department. So I'm asking, and in my letter I have asked, Attorney General William Barr to bring back the special unit to prosecute obscenity cases and to start with the clearest of clear cases. If you want me to, I will subject your listeners to a description of the kind of thing that should be prosecuted. If you don't want me to, I won't, because it is a grotesque thing to hear. Yet, this is the reality. It's coming in, whether I describe it on your show or not, it's coming in on your kids' video screens, and something's got to be done about it.
So you're talking here about an approach, it sounds like what you're suggesting to the Justice Department is, look, let's start with the low-hanging fruit, the stuff that is clearly outside the bounds of existing law. In general terms, what are you talking about there?
Do you want the descriptions?
Yes.
Okay. I'll give you the description of an item that is very popular and has been for weeks on Pornhub, the leading porn website. It is an image of a girl. She appears to be a teenager Whether the model has reached 18 years of age or not, I do not know. But it certainly appears that she's a teenager. She's made to look like a teenager, that's for sure. She is strapped down by her ankles, hands, and mouth to a plank. She is being penetrated by a machine while she is being burnt with hot wax. That is what your children have access to. That's what is the, I believe, fourth most watched video on Pornhub. That's obscene. That appeals to the prurient interest in sex. It's degrading to women. It promotes the idea of women as objects to be raped and abused. It undermines public morality. It's degrading and depraving. Certainly children should be protected against it, and they are not now. There's no justification for this in terms of literary or artistic or scientific cultural value. There's low-hanging fruit if ever it existed. And you could spend the next 20 years, as I said, with the Justice Department and state prosecutors prosecuting only stuff that bad and worse without ever getting into a gray area.
Is another bunch of low-hanging fruit legally the nexus between human trafficking and the porn industry?
You bet. And the victims of human trafficking are not my neighbors in the ritzy town of Princeton or people in the Upper West Side of Manhattan or in the luxurious sections of Los Angeles, Hollywood, and so forth. They are, in many cases, almost all cases, poor women. In very, very many cases, immigrant women, often women who've been trafficked in from Southeast Asia or South Central Asia, the stands. They very often are lured here under false pretenses. They're told they're going to be governesses or childminders or adult caregivers. They're trafficked into pornography, often prostitution. Many do not speak our language. They have no access to people they can go to tell their story, to try to get out of the horrible life that they've been forced into. These are genuine victims of the worst sort of exploitation and abuse. And I'm just shocked, by the way, that people on the left who claim to care about women, who claim to be feminists, who claim to be against the exploitation of women, who are silent about the pornography business and the trafficking of women into pornography, silent not only about how women are depicted as sex objects and used, but silent about the women who are being trafficked into a form of slavery, sexual slavery, right here in the United States, making hundreds and hundreds of millions and indeed billions of dollars on the naked bodies of these poor women. I'm not going to stand for this, and I don't think any of your listeners should as well. We should be rising up on behalf of these victims and demanding that prosecutors at both the national and the state level get to work in protecting them. And that means an all-out assault on the porn industry that has done nothing but abuse and enslave and traffic women now for, what, decades?
How do you explain the silence of ordinarily advocates for women, kind of advocates for the Me Too movement? How do you explain the silence on pornography?
I don't know that I have a very good explanation, but ideology is a powerful thing. And social liberalism, which includes, of course, the belief that pornography is harmless naughtiness and it's sophisticated and so forth, that kind of social liberalism is dominant in the elite sector of the culture. And so I suspect that to some extent, it's that ideology that is leading people who would otherwise, or at least would be expected otherwise, to be up in arms about this kind of exploitation, to be sitting on the sidelines, sitting on their hands, mouths shut, looking the other way.
What kind of a response do you expect from Attorney General William Barr?
Even as we speak, General Barr is making a speech to the National Religious Broadcasters. This would be a wonderful opportunity for General Barr to announce that he is recreating or restoring the anti-obscenity task force in the Justice Department. I hope that he will. If he doesn't do it on this occasion, I hope that he will soon. Attorney General Barr is a good man. I know him a little personally, and I certainly know his reputation. He has been willing to speak out about important moral issues. And here we have an issue that is not only an issue of public morality, and that's important, but it's more than that. It's an issue of public morality and an issue of public health because of sex addiction and its consequences for families, marriages. And it's a question of public safety because of the trafficking of women into sexual slavery in the porn trade. So I expect a favorable response from Attorney General Barr, and I'm just hoping for it sooner rather than later. The sooner we get about the business of trying to dismantle this terrible, terrible plague, the better.
Dr. George, we're honored to have you to be a speaker at the 2020 Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference. What can you tell us about your upcoming presentation, Making the Case for Constitution and Civic Virtue?
Todd, let me first say that the honor's mine. I'm honored to be invited to the conference. I know you have some very distinguished speakers there that I'll be joining, and I'm delighted to have the opportunity to speak to so many fine people out there and alongside so many other fine speakers. I'm going to be talking about the Constitution and civic virtue. Everybody knows about the Constitution's system of checks and balances, its structural constraints on power. Everybody knows, at least anybody with some decent civic education knows, and everyone should know, that the Constitution attempts to protect liberty and prevent tyranny by constraining power. So we do have separations of powers at the national level within the national government. We also have the separation of state from federal power, our system of federalism. We have a national government that is supposed to be at least limited in its powers, limited to those powers delegated to it. Our national government does not have plenary authority, what's called general jurisdiction. What people don't advert to often enough, I think, and what I want to bring to people's attention is the importance of civic virtue to the functioning of our constitutional system for protecting liberty and preventing tyranny. Those structural constraints on power will do their job. They will work to protect liberty and prevent tyranny only if we have a public that itself has the virtues necessary to sustain republican order, to be able to manage the liberty that the Constitution rightly protects for us. We need people who are well-educated enough to know what the Constitution means, what it says, how its principles work. We need people who are willing to fight for those principles, to call out politicians, whether they're liberal or conservative, whether they are Democratic or Republican, when they transgress against the Constitution. We need a people who are fit for liberty and fit for the rule of law under a Constitution like ours, a Republican polity like ours, established under the Constitution. So I'm really going to be talking about civic virtue and its relationship to constitutional structures and principles.
You can meet and hear Dr. Robert George at this year's Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference, Friday, June 12th and Saturday, June 13th in Chicago. Attendance is limited to 500. We're already at 460 paid registrants, so you need to register now. Learn more and register at issuesetc.org. Dr. Robert George is McCormick Professor of Jurisprudence and Director of the James Madison Program in American Ideals and Institution at Princeton University. He's author of several books, including In Defense of Natural Law and Conscience and Its Enemies Confronting the Dogmas of Liberal Secularism. He'll be making the case for the Constitution and Civic Virtue at the 2020 Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference, June 12th and 13th in Chicago. Dr. George, thank you very much.
My pleasure, Todd. Thank you.
Terry Mattingly is with us on the other side of this break. We're going to be talking with him about media coverage of Lent. Lent begins today with Ash Wednesday, some of the imposition of ashes. Christians do it a little different around the world, but it all follows kind of the same course of events. How is the media covering it?
There are so many issues throughout all levels of government that smart Christians need to view it as a way to care for our neighbor by making good decisions.
Molly Hemingway talking about her joint presentation with her husband Mark at the 2020 Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference.
The federal government has gotten much more involved in family formation or family destruction, abortion, other issues. And there are so many ways in which it's important for us to think about how we can defend the weak and vulnerable among us by making good decisions.
You can meet and hear journalist Molly and Mark Hemingway making the case for Christian political engagement at this year's Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference. The premier conference for Christian laity is Friday, June 12th and Saturday, June 13th in Chicago. Attendance is limited to 500. Learn more and register at issuesetc.org or by giving us a call, 618-223-8385.
Contending for truth in an age of anti-truth. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Listen to the best of the church's music for the season of Lent at LutheranPublicRadio.org. Sacred music for the season of Lent, LutheranPublicRadio.org.
Hi, folks. This is Matt Harrison, president of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod. Join us for the March on the Arch, Saturday, March 7, a pro-life event for you to confess your belief that life is a sacred thing. Check-in begins at 11 a.m. and a rally at 12:30, and then marching from the West End at Planned Parenthood to the Arch in St. Louis. Check out lcms.org/marchforlife, lcms.org/marchforlife.